From national news in D.C.
to behind-the-scenes coverage of the Nebraska Capitol,
this is your Capitol Connection.
And now, bringing the Capitol to you,
here's your host, Nate Graz.
And welcome to Capitol Connection, where we are bringing the Capitol to you every week from the Nebraska Family Alliance Studio in Lincoln. I'm your host, Nate Graz, Policy Director for Nebraska Family Alliance, talking about the issues that matter most, family, freedom, and life. And on today's show, we're going to talk about some important updates from our Nebraska legislature on the pro-life issue, as well as religious freedom and parental rights. We'll also talk about the crucial vote taking place in the United States Senate on Monday on Senator Ben Sasse's Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. It's a critical bill, and the roll call vote is taking place on Monday. We'll talk about that vote and why it's such an important bill, as well as get the perspective from an abortion survivor. But first, I want to start the show talking about the best, most important thing I heard all week from the state legislature. And that was State Senator Tom Brewer, representative of District 43 from out in western Nebraska, who gave a raw, heartfelt and courageous speech during remarks on a bill he was carrying being debated by the full legislature involving military recruitment. And prior to Senator Brewer's bill, the legislature was discussing, it's been hours discussing, a bill from Senator Slama to update civics requirements for students. And during the course of that debate, State Senator Ernie Chambers referred to the United States flag as a rag and also compared it to the Nazi swastika as he spoke out against this bill. And Senator Brewer is a decorated military veteran, someone who served our country for 36 years, during which time he saw a lot of combat in the Middle East and almost lost his life. We've had him on this program before. He is a great friend of Nebraska Family Alliance and someone I have the utmost respect and gratitude for. And if you know Senator Brewer, you also know that he's probably the toughest person that you'll ever meet. But when he responded to these comments from Senator Chambers about the United States flag, it was incredibly emotional and rightfully so. Here is a clip of what Senator Tom Brewer shared on the floor of the legislature last week.
But understand that I think I speak for most of us that have worn the uniform. It rips our heart out to hear someone say that they referred to the flag as a rag, because for those of us that have brought home those that we've lost, it's hard to refer to the flag as a rag, because you have to fold it and you have to give it to the parents. That's awful hard to do. And to not call them heroes, I don't know what else you can call them. They gave everything. So I would just ask that you remember, all we're trying to do is fill our ranks and do what we have to do to make sure that those things that keep our country free are able to continue. This is a simple bill. We're simply asking that you give recruiters an opportunity to recruit the young men and women to fill those ranks voluntarily. So with that, thank you, Mr. President.
That was State Senator Tom Brewer standing up for the flag and our men and women in uniform, and we thank him for doing so. God bless you, Senator Brewer, and thank you for your service to our nation and to our state. And there are several important developments out of the state legislature that we wanted to highlight today, including one bill in particular that was heard in committee last week. LB 423 was in the Health and Human Services Committee, and this is a bill that strikes out important language from existing state statute that prohibits school-based health centers from providing or referring for abortion services or contraceptives. And this is a Medicaid program where health clinics can provide healthcare services on-site in schools and get reimbursed for doing so, and provides easier and greater access to healthcare for students and even their families. And so it's an important program, but there are also very important definitions currently in state statute that prohibit any provider from serving as a school-based health center in a public school if they provide or perform abortion services, refer or counsel in favor of abortion, or provide contraceptives, which includes abortifacients. And this bill, 423, seeks to strike out that language and open the door for those who do provide counseling or refer for abortion or even dispense contraceptives to serve in our public schools as a school-based health center. And there is also an accompanying statute under the same section of law that would require school districts, that does require school districts, to advertise to students each year the health services that are available to them through this program. And again, under this bill, if this language is removed, that would now include contraceptive and abortifacients from the providers who would now be eligible to serve as school-based health centers. And the schools would basically have to give them free advertising for contraceptive and abortifacients that they're going to be advertising to students. And then the providers would get reimbursed with federal Medicaid dollars for doing so. Further, in addition to striking the language that prohibits abortion providers and those who refer for abortion services or contraceptives, the bill also removes a component of parental involvement and oversight by striking the only provision requiring official parental involvement in this program as a whole, by getting rid of an advisory council to oversee the scope of services and the policies that are being offered in the schools by the health centers. And that advisory board has to have a parent who has children in the school. And this bill eliminates that. So Nebraska Family Alliance was there to oppose this bill because we believe that school-based health centers should not be encouraging abortion or providing referrals for abortion providers, and they should not be dispensing contraceptives and abortifacients to school children. So there was a lot of pushback to this bill at the committee hearing, and understandably so. We will wait and see what the committee decides to do, and we'll keep you updated on the progress and status of that legislation. Again, LB 423. And also, still no movement on the Title 10 provision to prohibit taxpayer dollars from funding abortion providers that was removed unexpectedly by our state legislature's Appropriations Committee. They struck out the agreed-upon language from just last year that the legislature approved to stand with Nebraskans by ensuring that our taxpayer dollars are not going to subsidize the abortion industry. The Appropriations Committee voted to remove that language from the state budget, reopening the possibility that tax dollars will continue to fund abortion in Nebraska. This was a huge victory last year for the pro-life movement when the legislature finally adopted a budget that reflects our pro-life values, and we are continuing to lobby and work with members of the committee to reinsert that language into the state budget, because Nebraska truly is a pro-life state, and our budget should absolutely reflect those values. And it is critical that the members of the Appropriations Committee reinsert the Title 10 provision into our state budget. And lastly, one final important update, LB 627, which creates a protected class for sexual orientation and gender identity, was voted out of the Judiciary Committee and has already been placed on the full legislature's agenda. So the full legislature will get the opportunity to debate and vote on this bill. It'll likely be a couple of days or maybe a week or longer before that happens, before they actually get to it. But this is a bill that not only undermines constitutional rights to free speech and religious freedom, but also threatens and harms small businesses and violates the safety and privacy rights of women and children. What we've seen with this legislation is that it's not used as a shield against discrimination. It's used as a sword against people of faith. For example, all of the cases from the cake baker, the florist, photographer, t-shirt printer, wedding venue owner, even farmers, they've all been sued under this legislation, this exact same legislation, creating a protected class for sexual orientation and gender identity for disagreeing with the government's view on marriage and human sexuality. Under this bill, the government would be allowed to bully and punish peaceful Nebraskans for living and working according to their sincerely held beliefs. We believe that all people should be treated with dignity and respect, but this legislation replaces the kindness and tolerance of Nebraskans with the heavy hand of government that says if you don't adopt our new mandated moral code on what we say marriage is, then we will force you out of business or we will force you to violate your conscience and moral convictions. And we believe that all Americans, every single person, should be free to live and work according to their sincerely held religious beliefs without fear of unjust government punishment. So this is a really, really important issue. You can find more information about it on our website, NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org. And please consider reaching out to your state senator and encouraging them to vote no on LB 627. This is not an issue that we can just sit quietly on the sidelines and hope for the best. Now, religious freedom and free speech, these are foundational, fundamental issues that are critical. They're too important for us not to be active and engaged on. We have to be active. We have to speak up, because if we don't, we will watch our freedoms slowly be chipped away. And that's why Nebraska Family Alliance exists and has a daily presence at the state capitol to make sure that doesn't happen. But we need your help and your voice. So please visit NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org and stand with us as we stand for life and liberty in Nebraska. In Washington, D.C., senators are preparing to vote on Monday on Senator Ben Sasse's Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. This bill would protect newborns that survive abortions by requiring appropriate care and admission to a hospital. Under this bill, when an abortion results in the live birth of an infant, healthcare practitioners must exercise the same degree of professional skill and care to protect the newborn as would be offered to any other child born alive at the same gestational age. And currently, federal law does not adequately protect a child who is born alive and survives an abortion. We are so thankful for Senator Sasse's leadership on this issue and for continuing to push on this bill, and for Senator Mitch McConnell for scheduling a roll call vote so senators have to go on the record and be a yes or no vote on this bill. And after what's taken place in recent weeks in New York and Virginia and the commentary that's ensued, it's pretty clear that we need this bill and Congress needs to pass the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act into law. And for the second half of the show, I wanted to focus on this issue by giving listeners the opportunity to hear for themselves from an abortion survivor. Her name is Melissa Oden. She is an absolutely incredible woman and great friend with an amazing, powerful story. And she actually recently got to visit the White House to meet with President Trump to talk about this issue. I had the opportunity to speak and interview Melissa Oden last year, and she shared her incredible story as an abortion survivor, and I thought it was appropriate, given the vote taking place on Monday, to share part of the conversation I had with Melissa. This is my interview with Melissa Oden, survivor of a failed saline infusion abortion, author, advocate, and founder of the Abortion Survivors Network. Melissa, you have a truly remarkable story. What was supposed to happen to you before you were born?
Yeah, before I was born 40 years ago, I now know that my biological mother, as a college student, actually had a saline infusion abortion forced upon her against her will. And many people probably remember the saline infusion from the 1970s. It was the most common procedure back then, but that type of procedure actually involved injecting a toxic salt solution into the amniotic fluid surrounding the preborn baby in the womb. And the intent of that toxic salt solution was to poison the child to death. So literally it would scald the child, you know, from inside out. And typically after about 72 hours, the procedure was completed. The child's life was effectively ended by that toxic salt solution. And then premature labor would be induced, with the intent of that deceased child being delivered. What I actually know through my own medical records is that I didn't soak in that toxic salt solution for just 3 days. I actually soaked in it for five. For 5 days.
Wow.
They kept trying time and time again. I know, right? It's just kind of one of those things where people have to give pause. But they tried numerous times over those 5 days to induce my birth mother's labor with me. And, you know, I often joke I'm a little stubborn. I wasn't going anywhere. But of course, all kidding aside, then the stronger the likelihood should have been that my life was effectively ended. But finally, on that fifth day, they succeeded. My birth mother's labor was induced. And, you know, that was meant to be the day that I was delivered as a successful abortion, otherwise known as a deceased child. But lo and behold, when they delivered me, I was born alive.
And I mean, this is just something that people are not used to hearing, because the result of every abortion is intended to be the death of an unborn child. How do other people react when they first learn that you're an abortion survivor?
Shock, right? It's that shock. Like, how does this happen? You know, I didn't know that this happened. How often does this happen? Why does this happen? And then, of course, it kind of depends on what people's beliefs are, right? Because then they can kind of go from this place of shock to, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. You know, how can I support you? What can I do to help protect lives? And the other side, of course, is people who are shocked then go, but, you know, I don't support what happened to you, but maybe it's okay when that happens in other circumstances.
And how do you respond to that? Because I can't imagine looking at someone in the eyes who has that story and then saying to myself, you know, but it's okay if it happens in other circumstances, when they have to look at you and see a human life. I feel like that should change it, when you have to actually be able to face what the result of that is.
And I really hope it does, Nate. I mean, I do. I hope that even if they're wanting to say to me, right, well, you know, I still support abortion in certain circumstances, not just, you know, not yours. You know, I hope that they do walk away from that conversation and at some point in their life be changed. I mean, honestly, I would not do what I do if I didn't believe that I could plant that seed and that others are planting that seed, and that people's minds and hearts can be changed. But, you know, it doesn't make sense, right? I mean, it would be like looking at people who were survivors of the Holocaust and going, you know, it wasn't okay that that happened to you, but you know, right, those other people that were killed and we never heard from them, that's okay.
Right. And so what about for you personally? You didn't learn any of this until you were in your teens. How did you handle starting to find out what had happened to you?
I didn't handle it well. I'll be really honest. But I don't know of any 14-year-old who can go, hey, you know what? I can totally integrate that into myself, right, and be good with it. It's incredibly hard for me. You know, I grew up in a home that was adopted. I was born prematurely, and that my birth parents loved me. And so when I found out that I survived that abortion attempt, it made me feel like I must not be loved, right? If they loved me, they wouldn't have done what they did. You know, of course, what I've learned over time is that they didn't have any other choice, which is pretty typical when it comes to abortion. But yeah, it absolutely devastated my life. And, you know, I didn't want to be this person years ago. I just wanted to be like everybody else, right? The people who just got to live, who never had to know about abortion, or that their life was supposed to be ended by it. And so, yeah, I struggled. I developed an eating disorder and alcohol abuse because I just desperately didn't want to feel the pain that I did about the knowledge of my life. You know, thankfully, I had a really supportive family and school and church. And, you know, truly, my faith saved me, because I knew that God had a very clear plan for me. And I didn't have to be ashamed or feel guilty like I did for being a survivor. So, you know, pretty early on in my late teens, I knew God was calling me forward to do something with my life.
And I think that's incredibly evident when you look at all of the work that you have done advocating for life and really being a voice for the voiceless. So what goes through your mind when you hear some of the common arguments or talking points about choice, or that if you don't support abortion, that you hate women?
That's always an interesting one for me, right? You can probably hear a little bit of the laughter in my voice. You know, it's so many people want to say to me, oh, well, your birth mother didn't have any choice, so now you're trying to take away every other woman's right to choose. when people say things like that, it tells me how uneducated they are about the issue of abortion. You know, lots of people are just spewing the same talking points that we've heard for the last 44 years. And so I always encourage people, if they're going to say things like that, you know, to educate themselves. You know, the Elliott Institute reports that over 64% of women, 64%, report feeling coerced into their abortion. We know that story after story of women come with coercion and force, and so many abortions take place for psychosocial reasons, right? Socioeconomic issues, education, housing, lack of emotional support, the list goes on. And so what I want is for people to understand the dynamics behind abortion and find this place where they can work on improving the lives of women and children. Period, end of sentence. I would love to see a world where truly abortion is unthinkable, because we would never think that ending the life of another human being is the answer. I think that's the other thing, you know, that's been so just amazing to me, is that the story of my life could have been very short, right? Just another life ended by abortion, period, end of sentence. But instead, I got to live by the grace of God. And now all of these miracles have happened in my life. And now I get the chance to share that with other people.
It really is amazing. It is amazing. And now you have actually founded the Abortion Survivors Network. So are you finding other people who have a similar story?
A lot of people. As of last week, we are up to 223
wow.
other survivors. And in reality, I know the number is much higher just from anecdotal conversations with people. But yeah, just last week alone, I had contact with two new survivors and two sets of adoptive parents in different places who had adopted infants who survived the RU486 without an abortion pill reversal. The children simply lived, just like me.
Wow. And that too, the abortion pill, that seems to be sort of, you know, where this is trending. We're moving away from surgical abortions, and more people are seeking just to use a pill. And that creates, I think, a lot of complications, especially for the pro-life movement. What do you think the response should be to the increase of the chemical abortions?
Well, we should be fighting against it, you know, not only for the sake of the children, but for the sake of the mothers, right? I mean, I hear that time and time again. Oh, it's safe. It's easy. I know too many stories. I know too many stories of women who have faced great health complications in addition to being completely traumatized by that experience. And so, you know, we need to continue to educate people and to fight against all forms of abortion.
Well, Melissa, the work that you're doing is simply incredible. It's blowing me away. It's so great to have you on the show. If our listeners would like more information about your story and the work that you're doing, they can visit melissaodin.com. That's O-H-D-E-N, melissaodin.com. Melissa, thank you for being a voice for the voiceless and for being on the show today.
Truly my pleasure. Thank you.
That is one of the favorite interviews I've ever had the privilege of doing on this show. Such an incredibly powerful testimony, and so important to share that message, especially with the United States Senate voting on Monday on Senator Sasse's Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. We will be back next week with updates on the outcome of that vote. We are hoping and praying our United States senators do the right thing, and we'll also continue to update you on the latest happenings from the Nebraska Capitol and what our state senators are up to and the votes that are happening on the issues that matter most. I'm your host, Nate Graz, Policy Director for Nebraska Family Alliance, hoping that you'll join us again next week. Thanks for listening to your Capitol Connection.